Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
I do my grocery shopping early Sunday mornings. Probably sounds like an antisocial time to do grocery shopping, but I prefer to think of it more as semi-solitary. I say that because there's a small group of us regulars and we all know each other, and most of us greet each other. There's an older gentleman, I would say in his late 70s, maybe early 80s, who drives a similar old lady beige Toyota of the senior citizen realm that I do. And he always likes it when I get there first, because then he can see the dogs. And he has no pets, and so he enjoys seeing them, and they're always thrilled to see him. Then there's the woman who, she must be in her, it's hard to tell, kind of indeterminate age, maybe late 50s to mid-60s. And she's one of those people who wears her hair the same way she did in her prime. She's probably, not even 5 feet tall. And she has these bangs that are straight across and long hair that just hangs down on either side of her face. So it looks like a pair of drapes with a matching valance. She doesn't say much. Then there's the man absolutely reeking of some kind of aftershave. I have no idea what the name of it is because I don't keep on top of that sort of thing. But it's so powerful that I don't even need to see this guy. I can smell him. I know he's somewhere in a grocery store. And sometimes that's all the awareness I have of him. Could be he's already left and the scent lingers on. But I have been behind him in the checkout line a couple times, which is a rather suffocating experience, and he always orders one carton of cigarettes. So I had this mental image of him dousing himself in this aftershave so that no one will know that he smokes. When I went to the grocery store this particular morning, it was one of those days when the weather was trying to decide whether it was really truly going to give us the one forecasted break of sunshine between two large weather systems with their accompanying rain, or whether it was just going to stay gray and gloomy and sort of fade from one rain system into another. But I did see a lot of geese flying over. So apparently they're migrating again. They didn't all migrate before Hurricane Irene hit. I also listened to an interview with Alan Rabinowitz, the naturalist and conservationist who has done so much work in conservation of tigers, among other animals. And one of the things he discussed was some time he spent with an almost extinct population of people, the Mongoloid pygmies. There were many things that were fascinating to me about this interview, but one that particularly stuck in my mind was his description of the time he spent alone with one of these 12 people. Communication was difficult because it's such a small, secretive population that few outsiders know their language. And so it required a three-step translation to communicate at all. And yet he went with one of these people up into the mountains. And they did communicate, but they communicated non-verbally. Afterwards, when the topic had shifted from these extraordinary people to animals, the interviewer asked Rabinowitz about what she referred to as the animal-human bond. Rabinowitz described his feelings in some detail, but then summed it up by saying that yes, he felt something with those animals, but he also respected them as a species. From that comment and the interviewer's response to it, the impression I got was that there's a feeling among some that the relationship between humans and companion animals doesn't include that respect. I would like to say that that isn't true, but I know that's not true. Sometimes we look at companion animals as a tool, an embellishment. Oh, we wouldn't think of them as an accessory, something to carry around or have on the end of a leash so that other people would look at us and say, wow, look at that incredible person with that gorgeous dog, or some such thing. But I think sometimes we use them as emotional accessories. And whether or not fulfilling our needs meets our animal needs is a secondary consideration, and one that we sometimes don't want to know anything about. But when I compared Rabinowitz's comments to his relationship with those wild tigers he's trying so desperately to save, and his comments about communicating non-verbally with the pygmy, I couldn't help thinking about what the bond embodies, the real bond embodies, at its very best, is non-verbal communication, whether it's with another person or whether it's with a member of another species. I think every parent has had the experience with a child, with an infant or a toddler who has yet to learn to talk, when there is no verbal communication, or with a person, and particularly a beloved person, who's had a stroke, or for some other reason is unable to talk. And because you can't communicate verbally, you find some other way. And when you find that other way, it takes you to a more primitive part of your being, a more ancient part, a part of being that predates language. And the thing about this is that even though from the anthropological point of view, that pre-language human represents some lower life form, the more I thought of this as I was driving home and watching those geese and listening to this interview, the more I was thinking how much more perfect and universal that form of communication was. And that's when I vowed yet again that I was going to spend less time verbally communicating with my animals and ditto with the wildlife on my property, and instead try to tap into that common nonverbal language that I'm convinced we all share with all other living beings.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.